Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. On tonight's program, Life Rattle number 1280, we feature two stories by new Life Rattle writer Sarah Peters. Sarah Peters was born in 1992. She grew up in London, Ontario, with five brothers, one sister, three and a half parents, and a cat. After high school, she moved to the Big Smoke to pursue her... studies at university. In her spare time, Sarah writes plays, and walks around expensive home decor stores thinking about how she would decorate her home if she weren't a poor student. Sarah Peters is thankful for cheap wine, good jokes, and Joni Mitchell. Sarah is a beautiful writer. Her eloquent prose conjures an almost tangible atmosphere and imparts each character with the breath of life. With distinct dialogue and carefully chosen details, Sarah develops individuals you would recognize on the street. In tonight's first story, our narrator is introduced to an unconventional lifestyle when a friend invites her to a sleepover at the home of her genius artistic father. Let's listen now as Sarah Peters reads her story, Dusty Grins, tonight on Life Rattle.
Dusty Grins by Sarah Peters. Mom, I say as I stumble through the front door. Guess what? I stretch the handle of my backpack over the brass hook in the front hall. No homework? Better, I grin. Oh my, Mom mirrors my expression. Your dance got into the assembly? Yes, but no, even better. Honey, congratulations. No, Mom. It's not, I sigh. My hands reach up to cup her shoulders and emphasize each word with a nod. Amelia is asking her mom if I can come over for a sleepover. I have only known Amelia since last year, when we were both accepted to Lester B. Pearson School for the Arts in grade 4. But I know her house is the best sleepover house. Lemonade popsicles, 2 South African dagus, a puberty book Amelia's mom got her, an older sister. Great, Mom throws her head back with a laugh. Megan's at her dad's this weekend. Does that mean Mike and I can run around the house naked? Ew, Mom. My lips curl into a frown. The phone lets out a muffled ring. Where is it? Mom's head scans the room. She stomps along the creaky wood floors to pull it from under the couch cushion. Hello? She glances at her nails as she speaks. April's rain patters against the bay window behind her. Why, yes, she's right here. Just one moment. I bolt forward, slide across the floor, and snatch the phone from my mother's outstretched hand. Hello? I say. Hello? A man's voice comes through the phone. My shoulders sag with a sigh. Hi, I say, unsure of who is speaking. A gust of breath echoes through the phone and peals into laughter. Fooled you, Amelia says. Can you tell me what that was like? She asks. I chuckle and recount the prank. That is the rule with Amelia. If something funny happens, I have to relay the event for a second laugh. Okay, Amelia says. Mom says I can't have a sleepover. Sorry. Silence. A heavy feeling swells and burbles in my stomach. Just kidding. We can, she sings. I gasp and twirl around the living room. Except for one thing is that this is my weekend with my dad, so it'll be at his house, she says. Well, that's okay, I say. I have never been to Amelia's dad's house before. None of our friends have. Amelia's dad remains shrouded in mystery. A university graduate, a genius, a musician. He was homeless for some time. He once had a girlfriend who ripped out all the seedlings Amelia had planted in the vegetable plot. The list goes on. I smile. I can't wait. The bus grunts as it comes to a halt. There are no sidewalks. The potholed road leads to a dead end with a rusted playground at the bottom. Swings sway and screech in the cool spring air. That one is my dad's, Amelia gestures to the brown bricked house a few doors down. Cracked wooden steps lead to a sunroom. Dust fogs the panes of glass, save a finger drawing of a quote. I squint my eyes to read the clear, backwards lettering. A chair, a bowl of fruit, and a violin. What more does a man need to be happy? Albert Einstein. Our feet grit against the cracked road to the steep, sloped driveway. A black cat slinks out of the front hedge. Meow. Emily coos and purrs and kisses her lips at the fat cat. The screech of a screen door and a bellowing voice startles it back into the brush. Amelia! A fit, middle-aged man leans against the doorframe. His unruly, wheat-colored hair sits in matted heaps atop his head. He wears dirt-covered jeans and a tweed blazer. He pinches a thin cigarette between his finger and thumb, holds it to his mouth, and shuts his eyes while he sucks in. He opens his mouth, and a ring of smoke puffs out. It smells unfamiliar and sweet. A low rumble of song drifts through the front door. Daddy sang bass, Mama sang tenor. Me and little brother would join right in there. Johnny Cash, Amelia tells me. This must be Sarah. I'm Dan. Amelia's dad lumbers down the porch steps to shake my hand in his hard and calloused palm. He smells of the sweet smoke, sawdust, and incense. He ushers us inside and flings our coat over an antique coat rack, passed down from his great-grandmother, he tells me. I'll take you on a tour before it gets dark. Amelia grabs my hand. She leads me into the dining room. Dusty books, an old piano, two guitars, a pile of records, a wooden record player, and a large wooden table fill the room. A wire cage sits in the corner where two rats snuffle and chirp in wood chips. Scraps of paper napkins, covered in writing, are scattered across the table. The smoke of a purple incense stick in a wooden holder curls through the air. Hey, girls, Dan strides through the room. If you have a moment, take a peek at my song lyrics, will ya? I'm putting something together for a gig at the Blackshire pub next week. Amelia's dad speaks from the left side of his mouth. He palms a few crumpled napkins along the table toward us. Thanks, Dad. We'll do it later, but I'm touring now. Of course, yeah, very important. He smiles and whistles out the back door. Here's where we eat. We can feed the rats some of our food if you want. They like grapes and lettuce bits best. Dinner usually isn't served until 9. Sometimes 10. Sometimes midnight. Amelia smirks as my eyes widen. Come on, she tugs my arm. The dining room leads to an alley kitchen. Linoleum flooring has peeled away to reveal gray cement. A large black box with an orange fire burning inside hugs the wall next to the counter. A gray tabby lounges next to the rusted sink. What's that? I point to the box. That's a wood-burning stove. My dad doesn't believe in conventional heating methods. He doesn't believe in conventional anything, really. It will get cold tonight in my bedroom, but I usually just sleep with 3 or 4 blankets. At least it's not winter. Sometimes I sleep with my coat on. She tosses her head back and laughs. Girls, a voice echoes through the kitchen. Come on out and give me a hand. Amelia and I take 3 steps to the back door and swing it open. Dan stands in the middle of the expansive backyard. Piled wood, barrels full of water, and rows of budding flowers wrap around a large fire pit with carved wooden benches. This is where we cook our food, Amelia says. She hops off the steps and starts to build a fire. I learned that everything tastes better cooked over a fire. After dinner, Amelia leaps up and rushes inside. She comes back out with a glass bottle in her hand labeled dish soap. "Help me do dishes?" she asks. She sweeps our plates and cups into her arms and carries them to the rain barrel at the side of the house. I follow. My dad built a filtration system. Water collects from the rain, goes through this filter thingamajig, and the barrel fills with fresh water. Want some? Amelia lifts the contraption off the top of the large wooden barrel, dunks my glass into the water, and holds it out to me. I bring it to my lips and take a sip. I learn that the best kind of water comes from a barrel. The sunlight wanes, and cool, moist air makes the hair on my arms stand on end. Amelia and I bring our dishes into the kitchen and place them in the cupboard that hangs above the sink. The underside is stained a smoky black from years beside the wood-burning stove. Candles illuminate the dining area. Their reflections dance along the book-bordered walls. A smooth, baritone voice rings out over bluesy guitar. Amelia's dad leans back on the dining room chair. A cigarette wags between his lips as he speaks. "Hey, girls," he says between verses, "give me a hand, will ya?" Amelia leads me to the beaten piano wedged in the corner. "Give me a C, Sarah dear," he bellows. I tap the simple chord, and he riffs over top. "Hoopla," he yelps. "Now, play me a G. You know that one?" I learned that in keyboard class. "Brilliant," he grins and plays along. "Okay, now one more, darling. How's about an F chord?" I slide my hands down a step and press the cold, dusty keys. "All right, then. Keep it going with the C, G, F, until I say otherwise, all right?" I play the simple chords. Amelia grabs a guitar and strums in the same blues style as her father. Dan's fingers dance over the strings. 8 chords in and they start to sing. Everybody knows Amelia has the best voice at school. Now I know where it comes from. I learned that watching Lizzie McGuire with popcorn before bedtime is overrated. 10 songs later, my belly cramps with laughter. I stumble along the keys while Amelia and Dan strum, riff, and sing. They end off with In the Pines, an old classic, Amelia's dad tells me. Most people think it was a Led Zeppelin original, but Amelia's dad says it is much older than that. "All right, girls, it's just about the right time for bed, I should think." Amelia's father rises from the chair with a creak. I haven't seen a clock the whole time, but my body slows with fatigue. We shuffle outside to the moonlit barrel to brush our teeth and rinse our faces. Once inside, we warm our feet by the fire and then make our way upstairs. With our bodies curled up under heaps of blankets and a soft breeze whistling through the window, I drift into sleep. Cats purr, the fire crackles, and Bob Dylan runs through my head. By the old wooden stove where our hats was hung, our words were told, our songs were sung. Where we longed for nothing and were satisfied, joking and talking about the world outside. I wish, I wish, I wish in vain that we could sit simply in that room again.
That was Dusty Grins, written and read by Sarah Peters. Tonight's second story is a brilliant portrayal of a gifted young man, theatrical and dramatic, with an unsettling undercurrent. This story is especially fitting to play tonight on All Hallows' Eve. Let's listen now as Sarah Peters reads her story, The Rabbit.
The Rabbit by Sarah Peters. This is the personification of joy. Within each and every one in this holiday season, we hold the key, and that key will lead to the satiation of our hunger. While I speak, I will pass around the offering bowl. Place what you may, what you can, within the bowl. Tessero stands at the foot of a faded pink flat-woven rug in his bedroom. His voice, crisp as a celery stalk, rises to skim the wooden ceiling, drips down the poster-lined walls, and swoops us in like the wings of a mother hen. A red velvet cloak with a large collar drapes around his thin figure and sweeps the floor. Teacups are scattered across the dining table in the far corner. A framed picture of Queen Elizabeth rests atop the TV cabinet along the wall. A gold-painted Beethoven bust and Pokemon memorabilia line the shelf below it. Andrew and Nate share the brown tweed recliner. Jude slouches in the faded computer chair. Others take their place on one of the two twin beds or on the floor. Tessero lifts a wide-mouthed olive-wood bowl and casts it off to Christine. Pocket change plunk, plunk, plunks against the wood. I met Tessero in grade 10. He transferred from Central High School to Sir Williams High to audition for the musical theater program. He spent 3 weeks in the program, got cast in a lead role, then dropped out to pursue broadcasting and illustration. Too dramatic for him, he said. Too bitchy, Tessero finger-combed his champagne curls. How so? I asked. Let me put it this way. There was more talking shit about other people than dancing, singing, or acting. He smirked. I nodded and grinned. Tessero scans his bedroom. His pointed toes trace along the carpet's edge. Jude? Jude glances up from his spot at the cramped desk. He pitches his arm onto the Harry Potter novel collection to his left and corkscrews to face Tessero. Will you please? Tessero eyes the 27-inch desktop Mac on the desk, a prize from a short film competition. Jude swivels back, jiggles the mouse, and click, click, clicks. A timid orchestra wavers and quells from the computer speakers. Tessero steps forward and hunches toward his audience. We draw nearer. Through the dawn of eaves in the Everglades of the Starshine Kingdom, there came a time of darkness. Burdened with hunger, people walloped with rage. The fiery pits of anguish burned in their trembling hands. And yet, Tessero's hands punctuate his words. The orchestra simmers. A pale flute twiddles. Key change. Violins race, Tessero continues. A sliver of hope, he pauses, his eyes widen. Alone, they were left to wither and die. Together, they pooled their resources. One gold coin became 2, 4, 10. Together, as a wholly organic and ever-swelling commune, they thrived. And they bought pizza. The orchestra swells. Tessero raises his near-empty wine bottle. Cheers smother the music. Tessero's name is based on the Greek tessera, meaning four, as in the fourth and last of Jennifer and Ted Liston's children. Oliver, his oldest brother, is a pianist. Jack acts. And Violet is a visual artist of sorts. Tessero's talents aren't restricted to just one thing. His passions lead him a little ways down every path. Never racing to get ahead, he often turns back to try another route. Tessero missed the deadline for post-secondary school application 2 years in a row. While most of our friends flew to new cities for school, Tessero stayed and worked at the Toy Palace. He puts on puppet shows for children, discusses educational toys with new parents, and the sorrows of menopause with aged moms. Tessero is our constant. The first to gather us up and sweep us into his nest when we come home. The bowl drifts hand over hand around the room. Tessero grabs a transformer toy from the row atop his wardrobe and waltzes across the floor. A laugh bubbles from Todd, Coraline, and Jude. The bowl makes its end at me. Okay. So, who volunteers to count? Tessero jiggles the bowl to the music. I'll do it, Corinne says. Perfect. Thank you, Corinne. Tessero hands her the bowl. He stumbles to the TV table and grabs a slender porcelain teacup. Into it, he pours the last dribbles of wine and steadies the empty bottle on the table. Tessaro takes a swig and turns to me. I love it when we all return, he says with a grin. Most of us have spent the last few months in various cities at our respective universities. I didn't return until December 22nd. I wrap my arms around him. He smells of white wine, cedarwood, and sweat. I love ya. I love everyone here. I love when everyone comes home at the same time. I can't wait for summer. Think. Tessaro grabs my wrist and leans an inch from my face. Bike rides. During the summer, Tessaro refuses to drive. He rides on a clunky, maroon mountain bike, no matter the distance. One day, our friend had planned a picnic near the train tracks that crossed through Cherry Lane Park. Tessaro had to ride past my house on the way, so he planned to meet me at 1 o'clock, and we'd go together. Tessaro arrived at 2:38. I'm sorry, he yelled as he sped down the last stretch of my street. His tires skidded to a stop. I'm sorry, panted Tessaro. Beads of sweat trickled down his forehead. I left in time to get here for one, I swear. But then something happened. I woke up this morning and was positive I wanted to wear my striped shirt. But I got halfway here and realized that was definitely not the case. No, indeed, I needed my turquoise tee. So I rode back and changed. Then I rode back again. I was just at the end of the street here. Tessaro pointed to the curve in the road. But then I realized I forgot my hat. I had to have it. In his bedroom, Tessaro stares at me as Coraline's hands rattle through the bowl of change behind us. I love ya, I say. I kiss his moistened cheek. And I can't wait for bike rides. Tessaro smooths my hair and points behind him. Look, he beams. I hung some new ones. Pictures of our friends clipped to a piece of twine dance around his room. When the holiday ends, I return to school in Mississauga. I set out to write about Tessaro for a writing class. I text him for a favor. Can you send me a minute recording of you talking? I ask. About anything you want. He records it on his Mac and emails me within the hour. I listen to his voice in my dorm, ready to scratch down key elements of his speech. Okay, hi, he begins. My pencil stops. An unfamiliar husk laces his voice, like dust and grit cling to his vocal cords. I picture chalky teeth and puffs of smoke in ground porcelain. So, I'm gonna tell you the story of this really sad book I read. A really long time ago. It was part of a series of books with talking animals. They lived in an anthropomorphic animal town, and they had occupations. The story of the rabbit. I picture a rabbit, beaded eyes, floppy ears, sprightly and quick. In the story, she hosts a birthday party for herself. It's a tea party, and no one comes. Everything goes wrong. She breaks all her teacups at one point. Heartbreaking. There's a picture where she's just sitting on her floor or something, and there's tea and pieces of teacups everywhere, and no one's come to her party, and it's not a happy ending because whatever happens at the end of the book doesn't make up for it all. I picture Tessaro, alone in his room, empty pizza boxes splayed across the desk. I picture an empty, wine-stained teacup from parties long gone. A crack, thin as a hair, weaves its way around the delicate, shiny porcelain.
That was The Rabbit, written and read by Sarah Peters. This concludes Life Rattle number 1280. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Sarah reading her stories. Watch for more stories from the talented Sarah Peters come mid-December. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Be sure to tune in next Thursday to hear stories from new writers Anna Lee and Gabriel Michelli.